Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two of the show coming at you. So good to be with you on this beautiful Tuesday here in the upstate. I'm Cole Bryson. Diesel out today. He'll be back tomorrow. But nonetheless, we have three more hours to go on the show and a lot more to get to. Jack Veltri of Gamecock Central, Will Vandervoort, the Clemson Insider. We got to talk Walt Weiss, the Braves, college football playoff poll being released tonight, the first one of the season, upset pick, early leans, so much to get to, but we do bring in our first guest of the show. He joined us last week to project what was going to happen and look ahead at these playoffs. But now that the playoffs are here, a lot of you Tolos, especially here in the upstate, love your high school football. And we're joined by Lou Bezjak of the state newspaper to talk about it. Lou, how are you, man?
Hey, Cole. How you doing today?
Doing fantastic. Appreciate you hopping on with me for a few minutes talking playoffs. Let's start with the game you were at Friday, how it went, and also how it dictated what happened in 5A Division I. Dutch Fork, Irmo. Dutch Fork comes out on top. A close game, though late, as Irmo tried to foot the comeback, just fell up a little short, right?
Yeah, it was. They were down 28-7, came back, and they rallied. They got it to 28-21, had the ball, third and goal at the four. They got to the four and tried two rollout passes, and both were incomplete, and Dutch Fork hung on to win the region championship and to win the number one seed in the 5A Division I upper state playoffs.
Now, let me ask you about some audio we played yesterday, courtesy of your Twitter account on the show, I believe at 5:45 yesterday, with Dutch Fork coach Tom Knotts accusing somebody of stealing some film over at Irmo. Is that situation something that you believe people should keep an eye on, or do you think that that pretty much will be swept under the rug?
Well, swept on the rug. I mean, it just, I think they'll be more aware of things now. What happened, they accused Irmo of someone from Irmo. There was a player that played for Dutch Fork. I don't know if it was in middle school, but now is at Irmo, but still had their Huddle account, and they were able to log in. And, I mean, teams exchange the film. They could watch each other's film. But this is, they were watching Dutch Fork's practice
right.
Film. And Coach Knott said someone logged on as early as at Friday morning at 6 a.m. watching 2 hours worth of film going into Friday night's game. So, yeah, there's definitely some tension in the air before kickoff last Friday.
We're joined by Lou Bezjak of the state newspaper. If you have a question about the high school football playoffs for Lou, send it in on the Hub City Spartanburgers text line, 844-326-3663. Let's start with that Division II football bracket, Lou, in 5A. Obviously, the 5A classification split into Division I and Division II. You've got Northwestern, Greenwood, Indian Land, and TL Hanna all receiving a first-round bye. And then the first-round matchups consist of Catawba Ridge, Fort Mill, Gaffney, Eastside, Hillcrest, Riverside, Greenville, and Nation Ford. What was your initial reaction when you saw the 5A Division II bracket and your thoughts on who you think maybe has the best path to a state championship?
Yeah, you look at Pat. I mean, I still think Northwestern's the favorite, but after that, I think it could be pretty up in the air because Greenwood at number four seed, they're pretty good. Geo Hanna, we saw how they won their game last week on that kickoff. And Indianland had a great season, but Northwestern kind of put it to them and to clinch that number one seed. But yeah, you throw in those four, and I would throw in Gaffney as another, any one of those five teams, I think, has the best chance of representing the upper state in the championship game.
Texter on the Hub City Spartanburgers text line. Oh, the texts are coming in fast here, Lou. The very last text, we'll get to the other ones as well. Texter says, question for Lou, is there anyone in Division II that can beat Northwestern?
It's going to be tough, but yeah, I wouldn't say, they're pretty good. I think defensively is where they're not as good. But I would say, like I said, Greenwood, Theo Hanna, even Gaffney on a matchup problem. I just think definitely they're the favorite. It's going to take a really good game to beat Northwestern in the postseason.
No, I think you're right on that. Let's take a look over at the Division I bracket in 5A, Lou. You have Dutch Fork, Burns, Ridgeview, and Dorman all receiving a bye. Malden, Boiling Springs, Rock Hill, Spring Valley, Spartanburg, Mann, Clover, and Blythewood all participating in the first round. Going to ask you the same question. When you saw the Division I 5A bracket come out, what were your initial thoughts? Because there's obviously some really good teams in this one as well.
Yeah, Dutch Fork, the defending champ. Might not be the power. The invincible Dutch Fork team we've seen in previous years. They've shown definitely some weaknesses for sure. But now whoever comes, it has to go to them. In the home field. Burns, that could be them in the third round. And you look at, I like that matchup, and it could be a Spartanburg-Ridgeview matchup in the second round. I think Spartanburg, that would be a tough matchup maybe for Ridgeview, that they would have the bye. But, defensively they're pretty good, but they got some inexperience now at quarterback after Trey Howard went down. And then they made a quarterback switch during the season after their injury. So, yeah, that has a chance to be pretty good. Like I said, Dutch Fork's the favorite. Until you beat them, until you show you can beat them, it's going to be hard to pick against them. But like I said, throwing Burns, Dorman, Spartanburg, Ridgeview, any one of those five teams there.
Lou, speaking of Ridgeview, do you believe Ridgeview regrets not trying to get Javon Gilmore, the former Gaffney quarterback, eligible?
I think they wouldn't say it publicly, but maybe, I think maybe some of the players would. I think it would have gave them their best chance, I think. But for some reason, if they think he couldn't have been eligible for the playoffs, then they think that it wouldn't have worked it wouldn't have made sense to have a different quarterback during the regular season. So I think maybe down the road, I think it is, but I think they were confident that with the guys they had on the roster, plus they didn't think, I don't think that they could have won their appeal. That's my thoughts.
Not trying to put you in a bad spot, just curious.
Yeah.
I had this brought up over the weekend. Somebody brought it up to me about the Division I, Division II bracket. And it was a Greenwood fan. So, of course, with Greenwood being Division II, the fans are going to react to that one a little bit different. And the Greenwood fan said, man, Division II is a gauntlet. This is completely unfair. And I said, well, you want to go play Dorman and Ridgeview and Burns and Dutch Fork and Spartanburg when their running back's healthy? I don't look at it that way. I think there's some tough teams in both. Do you, Lou, feel like one's tougher than the other?
I think in Division II, I think Division II upper state definitely is a lot tougher than Division II lower state by far. I think Irmo has a very easy path to get back to the state championship. Nothing against, Berkeley or White Knoll teams that they could face. I think definitely the upper state definitely is a tougher path, and they have a point there. But overall, if you would just have one classification, yeah, it would be really tough. But, yeah, I could see their point. The 5A upper state in Division II is definitely a lot harder than the lower state in Division II.
Lou, texter asks, how far will Westside make it? Brian Lane and the Westside Rams won the region championship Friday, Thursday, a game that I was at over at Wren. They defeated Wren to win the region championship. Not the Westside team that Brian Lane had the past few years with the likes of Cutter Woods and a lot of really good talent. But your thoughts, I know you really focus on some of the Midland schools, but your thoughts on what Brian Lane's done. I know that he has to make a lot of those trips to Washington these days to watch his son, Jalen, play for the Commanders. But Westside's got Pickens, the winner of Blue Ridge, Wren. You could possibly see a rematch. Then they would either play, you know, Daniel or Camden, which would probably be Daniel. I think they've got a good shot until they run into Daniel. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think they could definitely make it to the Upper State Championship game for sure. With their bracket, they should be Pickens. I think they should win the following week. It is a good job. I mean, a lot of people counted them out earlier in the season. Yeah. You know, they lost so many players coming off the state championship, and then they struggled. It's up. I don't know if Daniels, I mean, they're good, but I don't know if they're the team that everyone fears in the Upper State there.
Sure.
So, yeah, I think they can get to Daniel. I think if they would get past there, I think it would be tough to get past South Point. I think they're definitely a clear-cut favorite, but I could see them getting to possibly the Upper State Championship game. That wouldn't be out of the possibility.
Texter, we've had two texts about this now, brings up 3A, Lou, with Woodruff, Oceanside, also a team that you've seen and you've brought up on this show a couple of times this year, who I believe is the 2 seed in Newberry. How do you see 3A playing out? I mean, Oceanside, correct me if I'm wrong, defeated Dutch Fork a couple of weeks ago. Woodruff, obviously a very good team. A lot of people think it might be the Woodruff-Oceanside matchup. You know, Powdersville obviously has had a good year as well. I think 3A is interesting with the amount of teams that get in, right?
Yeah, I mean, because everyone gets in.
Right.
In 3A. Yeah, all the teams get in the playoffs. Definitely Oceanside's the favorite in Lower State. But you got two other undefeated teams. You got Newberry and Loras. I think Loras is a team to watch out for in the Lower State. Still think Oceanside is the favorite and would be my pick. Upper State, like you said, I think Powdersville, BHP, Woodmont, Woodruff. I mean, yeah, you're going to have Woodruff really have a good chance to make it to the state championship game. And then it would be, I mean, Powdersville has the home field, but, I mean, like I said, BHP has been number one for most of the year, but I think one of those three teams, and then maybe see maybe a wild card, maybe a Crescent team that not too many people have talked about. And then you got Steel Mountain View. I mean,
yeah.
there's one of those five teams that definitely, I think, will be playing for a state championship. Tough to pick, but I mean, they have a good shot, I think, Woodruff, to make it to the state championship.
Lou, one of our coworkers earlier this morning put something on social media about the way the high school league does the playoffs, with 5A having, you know, two different divisions. We had a couple of texts on the show yesterday about way too many teams getting in. You just mentioned every single 3A team gets in. Can you go into experience or go into a conversation and give your thoughts on how the high school league currently formats the postseason compared to other states? If you think there are areas the high school league could improve on when it comes to what is being done in the postseason?
Well, I do think having, like, with 5A and 4A using the RPI and helping, because in years past it would be predetermined, the brackets, the year, you would know at the beginning of the year who has the home field, which that shouldn't be right. And I think we've kind of corrected that in 5A, 4A, and even 3A a little bit. They've gone to the seeding, but 5A and 4A going to the RPI and making sure, I mean, you get rewarded for a region championship and second place, and then after that's RPI. I think that's pretty good. Maybe eliminating around, maybe, because I think you're going to see a lot of blowouts Friday this weekend. maybe that would be a key, but I mean, I think it's better than it was with that predetermined brackets and that. In 2A and 1A is kind of still doing that. So I think I like it better with the RPI computer type rankings that take in the factor your strength of schedule, who you beat, and then who your opponents beat, teams you beat, and who they beat. So it's a little bit better than it was. better than the predetermined brackets, but there's always ways that you could tweak it and make it even better.
Lou, texter RJ gets in at 844-FAN-PHONE and says, which team does Lou believe can pose the biggest threat to Dutch Fork in 5A Division One?
I'm going to say, I would say Dorman or Ridgeview. Okay. One of those two teams. I think Ridgeview's defense, quarterback's not the most experienced, but defensively they're solid, and Dorman is really solid. I think one of those two teams, and Dutch Fork and Dorman have a history of playing, and they know each other. So sure. I think one of those two teams.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Dutch Fork, Dorman, Upper State. You know, the two good teams. Let me ask this. On the note of Dutch Fork, obviously we talk about Dutch Fork a lot up this way because – you know, they play a lot of our local teams. They're in the state championship every single year. What do you believe when it comes to Dutch Fork this year versus some of the Dutch Fork teams we've seen over the last decade? Is this one on the same scale as those championship teams, or do you see weaknesses? How do you evaluate this year's version now that you've seen a whole season?
I think a secondary definitely has a little bit of a question mark. We saw them giving up a few big plays that Irmo got back in the game last week. I think one of their strengths is their offensive line, line of scrimmage, offense and defensive line. One thing that they're kind of lacking is that number one, that guy that you have to offense, that afraid of a game breaker, the Jalen Hyatts, the Jarvis Greens, yeah. The guys, Elijah Spencers, the guys that could really take the top off. They have Stone Fury, and he could, on the play action game, he could go deep in that. But that one guy offensively that you're really concerned about. I think their best player on offense might be their center, Brody Lorenzo, who is incredible. He played center and tackle, and he's just a force. He's just a sophomore and going to be one of the best prospects in the state in his class. But, yeah, I think it's just that. The running back, solid. They have two guys, Wilson and Henry, that are solid. But, I mean, you're not afraid of them. And then you have a first-year starting quarterback on varsity in Jackson Knotts. And he's been around the program. Obviously, he's the coach's son. But I think that.
What year is he, Lou?
He's a junior.
Gotcha.
The starting quarterback, Ethan Offing, decided to concentrate on baseball. He's a Clemson baseball commit.
Yeah.
So he would have been the starter. He would have been a little bit different, I think. But, I mean, Jackson's done really good. He made some big plays on Friday night against Irmo. But, yeah, I just think that star power on offense, that one guy that really puts the fear into a defense.
And, man, I was impressed with Ethan when I saw him on the football field as well. To your point, I know he's – hey, let's end with this, Lou. You mentioned Stone Fury. His dad now may be handling some offensive play-calling duties after Mike Shula has been fired at South Carolina. Mike Fury and Sean Elliott now taking over the offense for the Gamecocks. Your thoughts on the firing of Mike Shula and those two and Fury and Sean Elliott taking over for the Gamecocks?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a kind of a year to offensively. They've struggled. And that was that was shown again against Ole Miss on Saturday. Yeah, definitely a change to be made. I don't know. They'll have that bye week. I think it comes at the right time and see if they can get a spark in or juice in that offense. Just something seems a little bit off with Sellers missing some throws and just the offensive line. It's just been not been a great year, not cohesive on offense. So maybe that change and more of a different guys on different voices. You have Elliott and Fury, and I'm sure Shane Beamer is going to have his input, more of a collaborative effort on offense, and see if they could get this thing going in these last three games.
Lou, you're the best, man. As always, appreciate the heck out of it, and you will be at what game Friday?
I'm not sure. I think maybe Great Collegiate and Brooklyn Casey.
Okay, so. Undecided, right?
Yeah, Great Collegiate BC. It's two local teams. Try to hit two local matchup. So.
Well, always appreciate you, Lou. Talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Cole. Appreciate it.
Lou Bezjak, the state newspaper, talking high school football playoffs round one. Again, no Burns football this Friday. We have Furman Hoops on your radio dial Friday night. Pre-game show at 6:30, tip at 7, Burns on a bye. And we will see you next week for Burns hosting the winner of Spring Valley Rock Hill. We continue the conversation of, let's see, every Tuesday. Yeah, it's 4:22 already. Every Tuesday at this time, we're joined by Jack Veltri, Gamecock Central. Jack joins us next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's talk a little Gamecocks. Why don't we on this Tolo Tuesday edition of the show. So good to be with you. I'm Cole Bryce and Diesel out today on vacation. He will be back tomorrow every single Tuesday during football season. At this time, we're joined by Jack Veltri of Gamecock Central. Jack, how the heck are you, man? As always, appreciate you hopping on with us.
Nah, man. Appreciate you having me on, and happy to be here talking with you again, Cole.
And you haven't been fired, unlike Mike Shula, who was fired over the weekend, starting with that, trying to make light of the situation because it's been a tough year in Columbia. Your reaction, Jack, to the news that Mike Shula was not going to make it through the entire 2025 season?
It was about time, I would say. And then, my stance on it is Beamer had to make this move. I mean, 10-game sample size just was not good enough. But in my opinion, I think this was just made too little too late. I think this probably should have been made after probably the LSU game, along with Lonnie Teasley. For whatever reason, I just don't know why that wasn't the case. But here we are now with 3 games left to go, and you're 3-6 on the year, and I just don't know why it took until now, but here we are.
Jack, I want to go back in time to the bowl game. One of our listeners brought this up yesterday, and I talked about it for a good while. You know, when the bowl game happened, South Carolina lost. They didn't look great offensively. They didn't look, it just didn't look like the same Lenora Sellers, right? There were Gamecock fans who complained about it. I said, hey, give the guy, talking about Mike Shula, give the guy the benefit of the doubt. It's one game. He literally has been the play caller for like 2 total weeks preparing for the bowl. Maybe yesterday, I don't know if the Tolos wrote it down because, you know, they'll tell you. I don't say this often, but I might have been wrong when it comes to the bowl game. Do you feel like that early sign should have been alarming? And maybe Shane Beamer, I know you can't fire a guy right after you hire him as the OC, but do you feel like that bowl game, now that you look back, was more telling than we initially thought it was?
Well, it definitely was telling, but and you mentioned it. I think, honestly, what they probably could have and should have done in that situation was, yes, like, I know hiring Mike Shula was the obvious choice, but I think maybe they would have been better off to wait and see how the bowl game played out, let him be the interim, and if it goes well, then he's your OC moving forward. If not, then I think you just go out there and see what else is out there. I think that was the biggest mistake. Now, to be fair, they had 390 yards of offense in that game and only scored 17 points, so I think you probably would have brought him on either way. But still, I don't think we could have known in that case what it was going to be. But there were some signs in that game where it's like, oh, Lenore Sellers isn't really playing like the Lenore Sellers we just saw against Clemson or any other point in November, or the offense just wasn't operating the same. But, It was one game at the time, and now we've seen that it's turned into 10 games of kind of the same thing.
So now that Mike Shula is no longer the offensive coordinator, Jack, do you believe what I said a couple of days ago to be true, that this is now Shane Beamer's biggest decision, biggest hire? I don't want to say the final straw, but the reality is if he hires an OC and it flops again, it could be Beamer who gets the axe. Do you feel like this is now the biggest and most important decision Beamer's ever made when it comes to the hiring of the next offensive coordinator?
I would say probably is, Cole. I mean, this would be his fourth offensive coordinator hiring, heading into his sixth season as head coach, assuming he still gets there next year. It really is going to be a big one because, look, you've made a few in-season changes now. You fired your offensive line coach. You fired your offensive coordinator in season. I mean, at some point, the responsibility falls on his shoulders, which it does in all respects anyway. But,
yeah,
you know, at some point when you're looking to make changes, if it's not going well, the head coach is going to be the reciprocate of what's going on. So we will see what happens going into next year, but Cole, my thought on is if things are going about the same as they are right now, going into next season and midway through the year, I just can't see a way in which Shane survives this. Mm. But, I mean, it really will depend on how this offensive coordinator hiring goes.
Who do you think's, like, I'm not asking for a specific name, but, like, when you look at Lenora Sellers, you don't know if Lenora Sellers is going to be your quarterback. You don't know if Cutter Woods is your guy next year. The quarterback position is uncertain as of today, and Beamer talked about that. I believe he was asked about that in the last time he spoke to the media. So when you talk about bringing a guy in, there's uncertainty around not only him, but the quarterback, the most important position on offense. What do you think Shane Beamer now looks for in the next OC?
Well, he kind of talked about it a little bit the other day, Cole, when we spoke to him on Sunday. Was he's looking for somebody to take the next step with this offense and help develop the quarterback room. It's a little vague, but he didn't want to get into too much detail of what exactly he's looking for. But, I mean, if you're asking me what this next coordinator needs to do with this offense, it's, number one, run an offense that's more catered to the college game.
Yeah.
This whole pro-style offense thing that South Carolina has been running this year just has not worked. This is not the type of offense you run with a quarterback like Lenora Sellers. Now, if you want to say it's getting him ready for the NFL, great. Well, it's probably actually helped him regress a good bit and probably fallen a little bit on some mock draft boards, I would imagine. Though I'm sure Lenora is still a first-round pick. He's probably fallen from a high first-round pick to a low first-round pick. So it's just the offense has been really, really bad this year. And so I think you just got to go away from what you tried to do this year and run an offense that is entirely different, more so catered to the college game, something similar to what we kind of saw last year with Dow Loggins and how much more successful a guy like Lenora Sellers was in his offense.
Do you believe, Jack, and I think we've asked you this before, but do you believe as of today, the fourth day of November, Lenora will be back next year?
It's a tough question to answer. I would say right now, put me on the spot like you just did, Cole. I'm going to say he's not back next year. I think he's still a first-round pick, in my opinion. We know how much money first-round picks make. We know that's not always guaranteed you're going to be a first-round pick. And I say that because I feel like Lenoris' stock is lower than last year. Because if he were draft eligible last year, we know he would have been gone. He would have been a high first-round pick. I think he's still going to be one heading into the 2026 draft. But if he were to come back and kind of have the same results as he did this year, I think that would probably definitely drop his stock a good bit into the mid or late rounds. And, I mean, if you're Lenoris and you see that you're probably going to be a first-round pick this year and you just don't know who the offensive coordinator at South Carolina is going to be and what that may look like, I think you take the money while it's there and go.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, if I had to say right now. We're joined by Jack Veltri, Gamecock Central. Gamecock fans, if you have a question for Jack, send it in on the Hub City Spartanburgers text line, 844-326-3663. Also, you can send it in on the stream where you can watch the show live on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. What was your biggest takeaway, Jack, from the teleconference with Shane Beamer Sunday?
Most of the talk was about Shula, so I guess I'll kind of stick there. You know, I'll say one thing. I think a lot of fans are kind of like skeptical or more so like wondering how much say does a guy like Jeremiah Donati have in this, with all the changes being made? How much is this Shane Beamer making these decisions? The donors, I mean, what does this all kind of look like? And I kind of asked Shane straight up, you know, when you fired Mike Shula, was this your decision? Was this a Jeremiah Donati decision? How much say did he kind of have in this? Or was it something mutual? And his response was interesting. It was pretty much the fact that he said, quote, it was my decision. It was 100% my decision, 1,000,000,000% my decision. So I think, you know, take it from the horse's mouth of what he said there, in that this was Beamer's decision to fire Mike Shula, as it was with Lonnie Teasley. But you know, it's interesting because Shane's never fired a coach in season before this year. Yep. And now he's already fired two coaches mid-season. I think it just shows that there's pressure to win, and you're not going to be much better if you don't make changes. Like, you have to make changes and adjust if you're trying to win games. I think there's a little bit of pressure to do that right now.
Jack, what do you make of the new guys calling the offense now that Mike Shula has been let go? We know that Mike Furry and Sean Elliott will be leading the offense. What do you expect that to look like? What did Shane Beamer say about that? And do you expect it to look drastically different down the stretch?
Well, let me clarify. Shane didn't say specifically who's going to be calling plays.
Okay.
I think there is those rumors going around about Sean Elliott and Mike Furry calling the offense, but that has not been confirmed yet. And we'll hopefully hear that here from Shane, who's calling plays when we talk to him next Tuesday in media availability after the bye week. But no, I mean, that would make sense if those two were calling plays. Also, don't forget Blackwell, the running back for South Carolina, has called plays before as well. So I think what they're going to end up doing with this, I'm not sure. But Shane did say it's going to be somewhat of, the whole collective group effort with the offensive staff calling plays. Now, do I expect it to be much different than what they've got going on right now? I don't know, because you can't really install a whole new offense at this point in the year with three games to go and a week before you get ready for your next game. I mean, that's impossible in my opinion. What I will say is, though, I think what can change is maybe adding a few new wrinkles into the offense, not an overhaul, but just adding some other things that maybe you did last year that worked so well with Lenoris. Maybe try to run more of that. But also maybe the timing of when you call plays in certain moments. Maybe Mike Shula called this play on third down, and now you're calling this other play on third down, and it works. Like, things like that can make a big difference, I think, in the offense. I don't think you really – if you can't make a full – overhaul scheme adjustment to what you're calling, you might as well try to just see and tweak different things to try and get better results.
And do you expect that to look drastically different? I mean, you talk about having a guy like Lenoris, putting him in a pro style offense with Mike Shula. I mean, if you're a Gamecock fan, what do you expect in these last few games? Do you think it's going to be backyard ball, more what we saw against Clemson last year? I mean, what should Gamecock fans, in your mind, realistically expect with this change at OC?
I think the offense is just kind of what it is at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to call the task of going into Texas A&M and trying to win that game. I mean, Cole, South Carolina needs to win these next three games to become bowl eligible. I mean, that's a tall task for this program. And, Texas A&M is really, really good this season. So I can't say I would expect too much. I mean, the offense just hasn't proven to us at any point this season that they're going to magically get it together. I mean, just because they made a change does not mean everything is suddenly going to become peachy and rosy. I mean, you fired the coordinator, that's fine, but you're doing it with three games left in the year, and I just simply can't expect them to make a complete overhaul to the scheme that they're currently running.
And to be clear, you don't think a bowl game's happening, right?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it'd be crazy to say they're going to go into Kyle Field, even if it's at 12 p.m. Eastern time. I mean, that place is rocking, Cole, as usual at Kyle Field. South Carolina has never won there before. And Texas A&M, I wasn't high on them going into the year. They are a very, very good college football team this season.
And then, Jack, looking back last week before we completely turned the page, what do you think was the biggest thing that went wrong against Ole Miss?
Lenore Sellers didn't play well enough. It's plain and simple. I mean, you talk about he gives you the best chance to win a football game week in and week out. Well, if he doesn't play great, he also gives you the least chance to win a game week in and week out. I mean, he's a very good player, but some of the passes that he missed on, it was just open targets that you would expect him to make these throws and hit them because he's got a good arm. But he just did not make the throws that he needed to consistently enough, and that hurt South Carolina a lot in the end. He was just not very good on Saturday.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there. And then the last question before I let you run, Jack, when you look at the entirety of the season with the firing of Lonnie Teasley, the firing of Mike Shula, is this, and this is the toughest question I think I'm going to ask you, is the 2025 season ultimately the start of, I don't want to say the beginning of the end, but when you look at Shane Beamer, if he were to no longer be the head coach of this program, you know, fast forward a year or two, do you think it's in large part due to what happened in 2025?
Well, let's say hypothetically he were to get fired in a year or two. Mm-hmm. I would say yes. I would say this was the catalyst that started that. Now, do I think that's going to happen? I still think Shane's the guy for the job. I mean, even with how bad this season's been, I think we see that how much of this season has been a failure is because of the offense and the play calling and everything that went wrong on the offensive line this year with injuries and other factors with giving up sacks, TFLs, pressures, you name it. I think if you get a good coordinator in here and you're able to, I know that the head coaching cycle is going to be crazy. I would imagine Clayton White gets some calls, but if he sticks around at South Carolina for what would be his sixth season as DC with the Gamecocks, I think if you run it back with the rest of these guys, maybe find a way to bring Sellers back. If not, go out and get a portal quarterback, in my opinion, or have Cutter Woods, whoever, and get a good OC in here that is proven and can win you some ball games. I think it's going to make a big difference because the thing that's missing with this year's team is, Cole, I don't even think the defense has been bad. I don't even feel like special teams has been that big of an issue. But it's the offense that has been so lackluster. Mm-hmm. And what do you need to win football games? You need to score points. And not enough of those have come this year. So get a good OC in here, and we'll see what happens. I think Beamer's still the right guy for this job. You just got to get this coordinator higher, right, 100%.
Jack, I lied to you. Last one. I know your team wasn't there. Your thoughts, was this a great World Series that ended last weekend? Did you partake because – or did you simply say, no, my team's not there, I'm not going to watch?
No, I enjoy baseball. I'm a baseball fan at heart, and I couldn't help but watch some of these games.
It was good, wasn't it?
Games 6 and 7 were very good. I think a lot of people have said this was the best World Series of all time. I might agree with that. I'm not sure if I would 100% say that.
It was good.
I would say this, though. Game 7 was definitely the best Game 7 I've ever seen, so what a great series it was with the Blue Jays and Dodgers.
Jack, you're the man, as always. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you, Cole.
Jack Veltri, Gamecock Central, right here on the Fan Upstate. Tolos, let me know. Let me know what your thoughts are, your reactions to what Jack Veltri had to say when it comes to South Carolina. We'll continue the conversation. We've got a loaded hour number 3 coming your way, college football playoff. We've got Will Vandervoort. We've still got to get upset pick early leans. We've still got to get to what the Braves did with Walt Weiss. We've still got to get to what Dabo Swinney said today. But let's catch you up on what everything, or let's catch you up rather on everything that did happen in the NFL trade deadline next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Tolos, what's your reaction to everything that's happened across the National Football League today? If you say, Cole, I just got off of work. I don't know what happened. You're the radio host. You tell me what happened. Well, I will tell you. The Colts have traded for Jets cornerback Sauce Gardner, probably the biggest blockbuster trade of the day. New York receiving two first-round picks in exchange, league sources told The Athletic earlier today. That's a big one. Jets cornerback Sauce Gardner now able to go ring chasing. Look, you do like hear, at least I do, I like hearing stories and seeing trades like this. I'll tell you why. Sauce Gardner's a heck of a football player. Sauce Gardner does, at his position, what few cornerbacks in the National Football League can do. So when you see a guy like this get an opportunity to go, if you want to call it ring chase, that's fine, but he's going to the Colts. I mean, who's ever said Colts and ring chase in the same sentence? Ultimately, though, they're a really good football team. So I love seeing stories like this. I love seeing guys that – and we're, let's just call it like it is here. We're in a terrible situation in New York. The Jets stink. Now he's going to Indianapolis, a really good football team. And the Colts are saying, hey, let's pony up. Let's go win this thing. Let's go for it all. I love it. That's a big move by the Indianapolis Colts, getting one of the best in the business at his position in Sauce Gardner. Also, the Dallas Cowboys, after getting their butts whooped last night on national television, are trading for Jets defensive tackle Quinnen Williams. So, similar player in terms of being one of the best at his position in the NFL, but not a similar story when you look at where he's going. The Cowboys are a 3-win team. They stink. Their defense stinks. Dak Prescott's been great. George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb have been good. Javonte Williams has been good. But the reality is the Cowboys aren't making the playoffs. They're not. They're not a playoff team. So, yeah, you go get a couple of guys today. You get a linebacker from the Bengals. You get the defensive tackle, Quinnen Williams. Again, one of the most special defensive tackles across the NFL. That's fantastic. But you're a 3-win team. What are you going to do? Win out? You're 3-5-1. You're going to win out and make the playoff? No. Come on. You're not going to win. The season's over. The Cowboys stink, and that pains me to say, but that's just the reality of it. The Jaguars trading for Raiders wide receiver Jacoby Myers, Las Vegas receiving 4th and 6th round picks in exchange, league sources tell The Athletic. The Cowboys traded for Bengals linebacker I mentioned, Logan Wilson. The Ravens acquire Titans Draymond Jones. The Titans exchange the pass rusher for a conditional 5th round pick. The Dolphins trade Jalen Phillips to the Eagles. The Eagles acquire the Miami pass rusher for a 2026 third round pick. The Ravens trade cornerback Jair Alexander to the Eagles. Patriots trade safety Kyle Duggar to the Steelers. Eagles have sent John Mechie III to the Jets. Sorry, John. The Patriots will trade Keon White to the 49ers. A lot happening right now in the National Football League, and the trade deadline has passed, and the two biggest stories are the two New York Jets, Quinnen Williams and Sauce Gardner, two really good players off of that Jets defense that, let's be honest, was a pretty solid defense. Now gone, the Jets got worse. However, when you look at it from the Jets' perspective, they all of a sudden have a boatload of picks, and I mean a boatload. So we'll see what they do. If they keep their head coach, if they keep their guy, But the Jets, when it comes to picks, are sitting pretty. Sitting real pretty. So that's what happened thus far. Well, the trade deadline, that is what happened today before the NFL trade deadline. Tolos, I want to hear from you in the very next segment. The college football playoff poll released tonight, the first one of the season. How do you think that'll look? Do you believe Ohio State will be numero uno, or does the playoff committee go Indiana at number one? Also, let's take a look at some early leans for the Upset Picks Challenge that begins tomorrow, kicks back up tomorrow, if you will. We've got Will Vandervoort, the Clemson Insider, coming up. A loaded show still coming your way on this Tolo Tuesday. But let's open the phone lines up in the next segment. Hub City Spartan Burgers text line always open as well. 844-326-3663.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.